Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And today is our first ever summer edition of Friends from Work, which makes us abnormally happy and excited. It has been a long time since our vocal cords have been going through these microphones and into your ears, out of your speakers. And we've missed it. We've missed all of you. So welcome back to Friends from Work.
Had to brush the dust off the mic here.
Yeah, no doubt.
Up in the back of the closet.
How is your summer holding up, Robbie?
Man, strange, you know?
Okay, yeah, same.
I'm down in Texas still, in Austin, and it is not great here in terms of the pandemic. I'm sure you've seen some of the national coverage. So we're sort of moving backwards in terms of the reopening plan. So, you know, more time than ever to just focus on the important things like podcasting.
Absolutely. Full confession, we ended our season one in the middle of a pandemic thinking by this time we wouldn't have much to talk about with the pandemic. Unfortunately, here we are still talking about it, so that's a bummer. But yep. I'll tell you, and I know our listeners know this already, but I have had the true joy of working all the way through these movies finally with my parents. So we just finished Ragnarok. So I've all the way through, yeah, until the last two. And I said, you cannot watch them while I'm not there. So now we're saving the last two till I'm maybe back in Michigan in July. But dude,
wow.
There's just something fun about being able to live vicariously through somebody else who hasn't seen them. Like, we watched Spider-Man Far From Home. Sorry, we watched Spider-Man Homecoming. And when Michael Keaton answered the door, both my parents were like, oh, what? No. And it's like, yes, that's why I remember that's such a good reveal. You know what I mean? Like, Man. It just reminds you of how good some of these things are. Also, last thing, Black Panther was so much better this time than ever before. It's been, it was good.
Thank you.
It's gotten better and better and better. But I just really enjoyed it this time. I don't know, through new people's eyes. I don't know. I really liked it. So
yeah.
I'm not going to put it fourth like you, but, you know, it was still fun.
Hey, that's fair. That's fair. I've had a couple of people reach out to me over the past few weeks that have never done the whole MCU journey. And yeah, it makes me so excited, even when I'm just walking people through it via text, you know?
Yeah.
It's a great feeling.
My last summer update is I have to share with all of our listeners that my wife and I are expecting our first child.
We just
announced that we are pregnant. So that's exciting. Woo! January 16th. So maybe next season two, you might hear a baby crying in the background when I start recording because I had to take the baby to the studio with me. So that's the new development for me. Let's talk about Spider-Verse. Should we?
Okay, let's do it. Yep, let's do it.
We put out a poll saying, should we review Spider-Man 2 or Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse? You all overwhelmingly chose Into the Spider-Verse. Now,
yeah, it was like 80-20.
This movie is very interesting for me in so many ways. So I have a lot of big picture thoughts. Then we can just go through the movie, you know, small picture, whatever.
Sure.
One of my first thoughts is this movie, to some people, to a lot of people, is one of the best superhero movies ever. I've read that a lot. I've read that in comics.
Yeah.
Comments. I've read that online. So that's surprising to me. It's very well done, but that, you know, is an animated movie. So Sony came out of left field with this thing and blew us away. So that makes this extra fun.
Yeah.
My next big thing is going to tie into the movie. So let me just start with this. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse came out in 2018. It has a 97% score on Rotten Tomatoes. Crazy. And it has a massive cast here. I'm going to read some of them really quickly, and they might not be in order of importance, but I'm just going to blaze through some of these, okay?
Yeah,
and I'm going to slaughter some of these names. Just absolutely slaughter some of these names. Shameik Moore, Jake Johnson, Mahershala Ali, Zoe Kravitz, Lily Tomlin, Chris Pine, Liev Schreiber, John Mulaney, Haley Steinfeld, Nicolas Cage, amongst others. It's a very large cast due to the nature of the film. If you've seen it, you know what we're talking about.
Right.
Lastly, it made $375.5 million at the box office. So really, really great movie. Funny to me how it pales in comparison to the Marvel Cinematic Universe money-wise, financially.
Great
it's
point.
Not even close to some of the big ones from
even
Marvel.
Even to like Far From Home.
Yeah, right. Once we got past, I think, like Iron Man 2 and 3, I bet all those movies beat that movie. You know what I'm saying? They all were more than that. Again, it kind of came out of left field, though. That's what I mean. Like, we didn't expect something this good to be animated and from Sony out of nowhere.
Right.
And this is where I'll most mess this up. Everywhere you look, it was directed by three people, which I found unique. Bob Persichetti? Persichetti?
Hey, that's fair.
That's not terrible. And then Peter Ramsey and Rodney Rothman.
Yep.
So
and written by Lord Miller, right?
Yep. That is my introduction to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Do you want to start with a big picture thought?
Yeah, I mean, so I was just going to speak to your point about it coming out of left field. I had so little faith in Sony at this point. And particularly as it, you know, Sony as it came to Spider-Man, just because since Spider-Man 3, they had just been putting out some very subpar content. The last of which had been Venom, which is where they like advertise Into the Spider-Verse. I don't know, you haven't seen Venom, but it's like the final scene points to that. So it's just like, whenever I was seeing the commercials and stuff for this, I'm obviously pretty familiar with the like Miles Morales mythology. And this was after the video game too, right? So, you know, you were probably already familiar with Miles as well from that.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into this with pretty low expectations. I actually wasn't even that interested. I don't really love the Spider-Verse thing. Like, it's a comic event
concept
that I wasn't super into. Yeah, like, I love Miles Morales. And to the extent that this movie is about Miles, like, I think that's actually where it shines. And I would love to see the sequel be... I mean, I think the movie does a really great job of doing that, even though there's a lot going on. But I say that to say that, like, in the comics, I just never loved the, like, oh, there are all these alternate dimensions with Spider-Man. Because it kind of, like, you and I have talked about this, it sort of cheapens it in some way for me. Like, just I don't love that, like, there are all these different versions of everything, and it makes, like, each one matter a little bit less somehow. Yeah. But...
Okay. But I have a couple big... Hold on that thought exactly. I wasn't going to start there. But we've talked about this for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, how I don't want this to happen, right? But that doesn't mean it's not well executed here. And what's interesting to me is I didn't know necessarily that the Spider-Verse was a comic thing. So I'm just viewing this as the film itself. And I kind of like how meta it is, because we've talked about how Spider-Man is a unique character. There's been movie iterations. There's been comic iterations. There's been television show iterations. So I kind of like the meta commentary on bringing in all these like almost comical different versions of Spider-Man.
Right.
So like, don't want this in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but for this movie, it was fun.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I mean, in terms of execution, and we can talk about this on multiple levels, but even that, I mean, the whole, like, all right, let's do this one more time bit is just it's super self-aware. And so I think it, like, I mean, so for me, this is, and I know this is bold, but I don't think it's controversial necessarily. I think that this is maybe the closest thing to a perfect movie that I've seen. And I don't mean that to say it's like my favorite movie. I just mean like given what it's trying to do and given its audience and given like the genre, I don't know that it could have like, I mean, I think that it's one of those that very much earns that score. And again, like this is me not saying
you
that I love it more than the MCU
movies. You just came out
with
an uppercut, like swinging to the biggest extent.
I'm gonna stand by it because this is one of those where like folks that I know that don't respond to Marvel Studios films very well love this movie, right? And then like superhero fans love this movie, and we've talked about that being one of the things that I think Marvel Studios does a good job of pulling a lot of people in as well. But I just think this movie was such a kind of crazy little moment where it's like if you've seen it, I feel like generally you either really like or love this movie. And I think that's evidenced by the response that we got whenever we put the poll out.
It's a tough movie to dislike. I need to set this entire episode up with this preface. If you're just finding our podcast, you maybe don't know this about me yet. I need to just acknowledge this is where I know I'm extremely weird, I'm extremely quirky, and I'm in the minority here. You know this, I like my things, right? I really like my things. So what's interesting is we started this summer series with the idea of let's pick matchups that have different versions of similar storylines or characters, right? Like similar right. characters to match up against each other. And we wanted to kind of compare a little bit or contrast and tie in to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Right. So I want to say this one of all the matchups is probably the hardest one for me to contrast to the Marvel Cinematic Universe for this reason. I love my thing so much. And when another similar thing comes along, it's really hard for me to go, oh, that's different and great. And I can like that as much as I like this and that. My brain, right. I know this is weird, instantly goes to, uh-oh, threatening my main thing, threatening my thing. And it makes me not want to like it. It makes me go, no, this is good. That's okay. I don't need to deal with it, right? So like, it's weird that way. Right. My wife can go, look, the Spider-Man video game, Spider-Man in the MCU, and Spider-Verse are three separate things. I love them all. I don't need to compare them. For me, I see things like Miles Morales or Peter Parker, and my heart right away goes to like the Spider-Man video game. And I start right. thinking like, oh, why is it not that character? Does that make sense? I know it's weird, but are you tracking what I'm saying? So I love this movie, but I've had to grow into it because I'm predisposed in my gut to not want it to conflict or compete with my Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so the fact that right. it's like an animated Spider-Man, not dealing with any of the characters I know, and it's not dealing with the video game either, which I love as much almost as Tom Holland's version, then I'm like, oh no, I don't want to like this. So that's my preface right. to everything I'm about to say.
So for me, I actually get what you're saying. The fact that it's animated sort of helps that for me. Like it puts
like,
it in a
okay,
whole different category.
So different that it's not trying to compete, whatever.
Right. Like I feel differently, for instance, about like Venom and Deadpool, and we'll kind of deal with those when we get there because those are like live action Marvel character movies. But this one, I feel like, yeah, it's just like running on a parallel course. However, you know, there are all of these theories about how this may or may not link in if Marvel does do like, which I mean, they are doing the multiverse to the extent that they have a movie coming out called The Multiverse of Madness.
Right.
So, you
know,
we'll see.
If you've listened to our podcast, you know I'm hesitant, but I am excited.
Here's one thing that I love about this movie before I kind of get into some of the comic book background stuff. And I felt the same way when I was watching Spider-Man 2. Like even when here we're talking about the alternate realities and all of the different dimensions and everything, I still think that there's something that works really well about Spider-Man being the only superhero. There's some, like the whole with great power, there must also come great responsibility thing has so much more weight. And I say that having like raved about Homecoming and Far From Home, and I love Tom Holland's character. And I love it because I feel like they incorporated Spider-Man into the existing MCU so smoothly and so well. Mm. But you know what I mean? Like, just this idea that it's
See,
like,
that's coming from someone who's got a soft spot for Spider-Man, whereas I have a soft spot for the Avengers. So I want to see him fit in, but I get what you're saying. With great power comes great responsibility carries less meaning when there's a Thor out there.
Right. Right. Like, and even just the idea that now that Spider-Man, like, so to get into the comic book stuff, like, this did a really great job of adapting the Ultimate Spider-Man comic that introduced Miles Morales in the first place. And I think one of the things that made that really poignant is Ultimate Spider-Man started in like 2000 or 99, I think, and ran for like 10 years, almost, or maybe literally 10 years, with a younger kind of high school version of Peter Parker that was super similar to the Tom Holland version. We've kind of talked about that some. Mm-hmm. And then in this like pretty emotional scene, they kill off Spider-Man, like pretty similar to how we have it in, or Peter Parker, sorry, similar to how we have it in the Spider-Verse. And it's like a comic book death that really means something. And that's something else we've talked about, like how in the movies, generally like deaths mean something, like in the MCU films, whereas in comics, like people always come back. And so it's like, there's not a lot of weight attached to that. But I feel like what made the whole Miles story so great is it's like there was this Spider-Man size like gap in this universe. And so Miles, like being someone else that has these powers, feels like he like has to step up. And I guess what I'm saying is, if you are in like the MCU world, I don't know that you have that same kind of weight where it's
this
like
power vacuum.
Right, right. So I'm saying, yeah, two things there. One, I think this adapted the Bendis Pacelli comic really well. And two, I just think that like this captures, again, like similar to what I was saying about the Raimi films, like some of the mythos and the heart of Spider-Man. And to your point earlier too, the way that this movie works in all the various Spidey pop culture, I think is genius and like perfectly executed.
So that's what I was going to say is my biggest takeaway is that this movie is just so fun and it's so well executed. And one of the ways it's most fun for me is in that Spider-Man lore. Yeah. Because at this point now I know all those things I said, like I know a little about the show and I know about the old movies and the new movies and the Spider-Man game, all that stuff. And it's just kind of fun to, I don't know, there's like Easter eggs galore into the Spider-Man lore. And again, kind of twisting on some of that stuff. And so, I don't know. It's fun to see. I noticed on this viewing, this is so dumb, but like Miles has that electric touch. Well, now, I don't know comics, Robbie. Remember that? So, like, now all of a sudden, on my new Miles Morales video games coming out, they advertise he's got that electric touch. So I'm like, oh, that must be a thing. That's so fun. Or the invisibility. Or the other versions of Peter Parker. Or, you know, how fun would it be if Peter Parker and MJ got divorced and like didn't make it work out? Like, it's fun to mess with all the Spider-Man lore in Spider-Man worldness, if that makes sense.
And that's another thing that I was going to point out. There's always this argument within, and this is getting way out of your territory here, but I'll only stay here for a second, I promise. There's this big argument within the Spider-Man fan community about whether or not Spider-Man should be allowed to grow up.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about that because I have to talk about that.
Okay, yeah. And because I feel like this is an interesting MCU point as well. Because the thing is, like in the comics, he was introduced very much as a teenager and meant to be a teenager. And that's what Stanley wanted, was someone that like teenage readers could relate to. But that was in the early 60s, and the character like can only stay that long. And I don't think, frankly, Stanley thought that the character was going to have the longevity that it did. So he like moved him through high school and into college like pretty quickly, like within the first few years. And then pretty much within like comic canon world, he stayed like late 20s pretty much ever since.
See, this is a fascinating concept to me because we've talked about this for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I don't want to talk too much about Homecoming, but I've told you, two things can be true at the same time. I love Homecoming and Far From Home. And I'm also a little concerned because I want Spider-Man to grow up. Can Tom Holland play a more grown-up Spider-Man? So I don't know if that's Spider-Man fan blasphemy, what I just said, because maybe some fans don't want him to ever grow up. So I think Homecoming is like a perfect iteration of him being young. But I like seeing older versions of Spider-Man here in this movie.
Yeah. No, totally. That's what I was going to say. Like, I love, one of my favorite Spider-Man runs is one by J.M. Straczynski from like 2001. And it's about the most kind of grown-up Spider-Man we get, where it basically treats him like he's in his 30s and has like very adult, like he's got a teaching job and he's like, has marital problems, and it's just like, it's kind of similar to Peter B. Parker that we get in Into the Spider-Verse. And I like that because it's different. Like, you can only do like what you're saying. Like, I've loved Homecoming and I've loved Far From Home. If we get another Tom Holland Spider-Man film where he's like kind of awkward, geeky teenager, it's gonna kind of wear on me a bit, I think.
Yes. Okay. We have a lot to cover with the actual film. My last thought on that note before we quick get through some of those other points is that I wrote this down. Tom Holland can take a note from Chris Pine, the first Peter Parker in this movie, and from the voice actor and the writer of the Spider-Man video game on the one linerness nature of Spider-Man. Now, Tom Holland does the awkward thing so well, and this is the last time I'm going to compare and contrast these movies. But when Chris Pine does like the jokes of like Doc Ock's got a something around his neck and he's still doing like fun one-liners, just like the video game, that feels like the most fun version of Spider-Man, and I haven't gotten that from Tom Holland yet. So, John Watts can take that. No, hold on. We commented in those movies that he does have some one-linerness, but it could be up a step, up a notch. Like, this movie makes that, like, reiterates that for me, where I watch this and go, oh, yeah, that's the feeling I want to have when Spider-Man's in a fight that's maybe not for the end of the world, let's say, right?
Yeah.
And one last thing, Tom Holland is a little bit at a disadvantage because he was tossed right away into, like, galaxy-ending events. Right. So I want him to treat those seriously. You know, there's just something about the funness of this one that I want him to get.
And we still get, like you said, we still do get some great Tom Holland stuff, I think.
For sure. I love Homecoming,
No, totally. But I mean, even in terms of one-liners, but, you know, we talked about this at the time, and then we can move on, I promise, from the MCU, although that is what this podcast is about, so I think it's fine.
Yeah, true. It's kind of more tied in than I thought.
Right. But, like, we talked about how when Tom Holland came in, everyone, or a lot of the characters we'd already been introduced to in the MCU were super quippy and funny and kind of overconfident.
So,
they really had to figure out how to, and that's why I think that it was so genius the way they leaned into the geekiness. However, I think the opening now that a lot of the original Avengers team is off the map, like, he can kind of grow into that. And I think that's what Far From Home was trying to do. And to your point, I think Into the Spider-Verse is just legitimately hilarious a lot of the time. Like, and that makes sense because I think Lord Miller, most of the stuff that they do is hilarious. But, like, I would definitely, you know, to the extent that we're ranking, and it's a different kind of humor, but I would say that it's like up there with like Guardians and Ragnarok in terms of like funny superhero movies.
Okay.
And I think the banter is great in terms of the battle, but even like whenever he's first changing, after he's like pulled Gwen's hair out and he's walking and he's like, nobody knows, everybody knows. And he's like looking around and it's just one girl that's like really tall. And he's like, wow, she's super tall. Or like the same scene.
Again, it's a very funny movie, but don't mess with my things. Guardians and Thor Ragnarok are my things, Robbie. Don't start comparing these two, okay? I'm getting a little red in the face because I'm getting a little frustrated that that was brought up.
Different.
But yes, it is a very funny movie. Can we also talk about the music? The music is a huge plus. It's very Guardians-like in that nature where It's the music plays a massive role. I mean, there's tons of songs. It's just bang, bang, bang.
Well, the soundtrack and the score by Daniel Pemberton is also fantastic. Like, to the extent, I mean, like, you can, it, the way it flows is really great. Like, we talked about that with Black Panther as well, the way that they flow, like, the Ludwig Göransson score into the Kendrick rap stuff. And they do a similar thing here. And it makes certain moments, like, really, I would say even more so than Black Panther in terms of, like, the soundtrack element. Not the score. I think the Black Panther score is better. But, like, the moment, like, the What's Up Danger when he's, like, taking the leap of faith there at the end. Like, mm-hmm. the song adds so much to that.
It's more a better comparison to Guardians 1, I think. That's the feel it gives you, you know, with how
that's
those
true. Music, yeah, and, you know, yeah, because we talked about that. Like, Tyler Bates and the, yeah. Also, I feel like we have to talk about the animation itself.
Very unique.
Yeah, this is so Sony actually like patented this animation process after the fact where, I mean, what they did, I think it took forever to actually execute, but they computer animated everything like they would for like a Pixar movie, I guess, and then had folks go back and draw on top of the computer animation.
Yeah, it's almost like blurry, almost.
Yeah. It's this like almost like cel-shaded, like old school video game kind of a vibe. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really impressive.
Yeah. And it emphasizes the comic fun. That's what I was going to say. Like even drawing in bubbles of what he's thinking. No one's looking. No one's going to know. You know, they draw those bubbles in. It's very unique, but it definitely works. In general, again, like I wrote that down, like it's obviously well written. It's obviously extremely creative, clever, and well executed. In all these ways, even down to the animation, you know, I will say I love the movie at the very end when they're all going back to their realities. It hit me like I don't really feel for the Nick Cage mm-hmm. character or the pig or the Japanese one very much. But then I realized, you know, they have a lot to do. And on this viewing, I realized they have very few lines. I mean, it's like you have almost no time to get connected to them. But then it's immediately contrasted by, oh gosh, I care so much about Peter Parker who has divorced his wife. So in one scene, it shows me like my feelings tell me how much, oh, these characters are well developed. Maybe it could have been a little bit better. Like, I don't know that like I have the same tie. Like, for example, Groot does not have very many lines ever. Right. And yet I think I felt more for him than I ever feel for like Nick Cage's character or anything like that.
That's fair.
But that line that Peter Parker says, how do I know that I won't mess it up again, is such a good line. And it's such a beautiful moment because he's been reluctantly teaching Miles all this time only to kind of need like a word from Miles to move on. And I love the beauty of that moment. So I was kind of like into the movie, but it wasn't really getting me. And then that line all of a sudden got like chills sent up my spine. I was like, oh, ooh. I guess I do care about that line.
And props to Jake Johnson for just killing that performance. Like, I feel like I love that Chris Pine and Jake Johnson kind of sound similar. So you can make it be the same person in alternate realities. But mm-hmm. that it's like what you're saying.
They
like
do.
Chris Pine is the really confident, you know, like, the kind of
perfect
got it all
version.
Together guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Jake Johnson is the like kind of haggard, you know, like mm-hmm. and a little overweight, whatever. And I think the way he, like I was paying attention, just the way, as great as the writing is, the way he delivers a lot of those lines really like puts it over the top. I also wanted to say like the Nick Cage Spider-Man, even if you don't have an emotional connection, those are some of my favorite lines.
For sure.
I love drinking egg creams and punching Nazis line always gets me.
Well, and I didn't say that to say like it was a huge negative. That was just one thing I don't feel as much. But kind of tying in what we've talked about on our podcast a lot is like you don't need a ton of screen time to really make someone feel for someone. Remember we talked about that with Thor's mother?
Right.
And we contrasted that to some other characters. But an example of that for me is Fisk. You get one scene of his backstory, and it's like 45 seconds long, but I personally felt like it was so well done and so heartbreaking that all of a sudden you have a different side of you feeling for Fisk a little bit. And it only took 45 seconds of screen time. So it's not strictly, you know, tied in or correlated with how much time you get to how effective you can be.
That is a good point. I also love just the way that Liev Schreiber plays. Like, it's a very different kind of Kingpin than the version that has been associated with Daredevil. Where it's a lot, I mean, it's, I was going to say it's more cartoony. It's a cartoon movie. But I just feel like it's like, it's, there's this menace to it. But yeah, you're right. Like, there's like a little bit of like underlying kind of heart there where you do kind of care about, like, you care about his motivation to some extent. And it kind of hurts whenever you see him like seeing versions of his family pop up and knowing that he can't be with them.
It's good. It's really fun. I'm going to show my naivety. How do you say it? What is it? What's the word?
Naivete.
What the heck? I don't know. I just had a stroke live on air. I'm going to show you how little I know about this by asking you a couple questions, if you don't mind, just really briefly. So Miles, the comic character, always had electricity and invisibility?
Yeah. In the way that it's presented, it's, I mean, it's similar to here where it's a different kind of spider. So the idea is it has like different properties. And so he has basically all of Spider-Man's powers, but then these sort of extra things that they introduce.
Dope.
Yeah, convenient. It's cool. Yeah.
And then the very end of the movie, are we led to believe, I mean, they can communicate with each other somehow. Is Miles able to go back and forth between the realities? Because he talks to Spider-Gwen at the very end, the very last line. Is that, or is that just a teaser for the next movie?
I think that's just a teaser. I mean, there's no, like, again, within the Spider-Verse mythology in the comics, they have these, like, these devices that allow them to go back and like, so that Marvel has an excuse to do all sorts of crossover things. But, yeah, I mean, I think I've read that their plans for the sequel involve both expanding all the different kinds of Spider-Mans and also like zeroing in on the Miles Gwen relationship. So I feel like it's a teaser in both regards.
There was a little while during the writing process that they were going to make that romantic. I read, and then they decided not to. So definitely there could be something there too. And then if they can go back and forth, can they fight? Are they friends? How's that work? You know, there's a lot to go on there. I don't know. I loved it. Do you have anything else about the movie that you liked or disliked?
Just like, just little things that I love as like the nerd in me. Like I like that they are trying to put this within a specific Marvel universe, I think, which is kind of the ultimate Spider-Man universe. And they're trying to show that Miles doesn't live in like our world. And so like you see all these little like, Chance the Rapper has the hat with the 4 on it instead of the 3, or like instead of NYPD, it's PDNY. And like if you look at the receipt when they're getting burgers, like it's like a burger is like $11,000 or something because like the value of a dollar is different. Like all these little things they put in, even the Green Goblin being like the big monster is reminiscent of that universe in the comics. So there, you know, there's some kind of shout out stuff there and just some stuff that they, you know, again, didn't have to add, but just kind of enhances the idea that, like, this is what it's like whenever Peter B. Parker talks about, like, I was in New York, but it was different than my New York. Like, I like how they went about bit by bit. Like, there's, like, a Seth Rogen comedy special or something that's being advertised in Times Square that's, like, a little bit off from, like, an actual one. Just, like, a bunch of small things like that that are fun, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, the cast is insanely good. Mahershala, I think, makes Uncle Aaron such a lovable character that, again, like what you're talking about, you really don't get that much time with him. And it, like, really hits you whenever he dies. And like, the shoulder touch
thing. And his relationship with his dad is so good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just think, like I said at the start, I mean, it's different, but it's similar to me in the MCU to the extent that I think it does a great job of balancing kind of levity and humor with some heart moments. I think the only other moments I was going to mention Obviously, the first time we see Miles as Spider-Man, like fully in his suit, is a really cool moment. We talked about how the music plays into that, but also one that I always
his like finally realizing his Spider-Man powers is awesome. For me, this is gonna be controversial. For me, it gets me going more than like the come on Spider-Man moment.
This was
a cooler moment for me when he's finally like getting it. And he shows back up, and he's got the black suit, which is dope, and it's spray painted.
That's so cool. And it's so cool that they set that up with the graffiti scene at the beginning, so it makes sense that he would, you know.
Right, yeah.
But, like...
Everything matters.
Everything matters, yeah. I mean, so I would... The other scene that I love that's really small, but whenever I'm talking about the balancing, the humor and the heart, is, like, whenever they first get into the spider lair, and... You have Peter B. Parker looking at the picture of MJ, and you can tell it's like making him sad. And Miles notices that and intentionally makes the cape joke to kind of distract him. Like, it's like little things like that that I just like, I don't know. It's great. It's great writing. And I feel like it enhances those characters again and those relationships.
The bread scene with MJ is really funny to me.
Yeah.
When he finally sees her, don't talk to her. He's gone.
I'm so sorry for not bringing you more bread sooner.
It's really, really okay.
And the other thing, we've talked about this some with Far From Home, how in like Venice, you know, different street signs and things, they do shout outs to Spider-Man creators. They do that a ton in this movie. Like, if you look in the contacts in Miles' phone, they're all, like, famous Spider-Man artists and writers.
I love that kind of stuff.
So, yeah, that stuff's fun. But, yeah, I mean, look, I think there's just not a ton of bad stuff to say about this movie. It was a lot of fun to rewatch, and I understand why people voted for it.
I'm not going to sit here and compare it. Like, I'm not going to make a list compared to all the other versions. But it is a really, like you said it perfectly at the beginning, what it's trying to accomplish, it does an amazing job of accomplishing that.
Yeah.
Near perfect. It is really, really well done. It's a really fun movie. If you've never seen anything regarding related to Spider-Man, you still might enjoy this. It's still fun.
Yeah.
It looks amazing. The characters are well written. It's clever. It's creative. It's funny. I love it.
I think,
okay. Yeah. As always, guys, this is going to be a podcast episode. So if you're listening to this now, you're probably hearing it again, like I said, out of the beautiful speakers into your beautiful ears.
Classic.
But you can subscribe to us anywhere podcasts are found. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere, iHeart, Google Play, Stitcher, all of it. We also have a website, theffwpodcast.com. If you go to the contact section there, we get those messages and we try to respond to them. In fact, I have to still respond to one right now. And we love that. We love your feedback. We love staying connected. We're super pumped about season 2 of our podcast. We don't know the start date yet because Disney doesn't know the start date yet. As soon as they announce it, we will have some big announcements on how that's going to work and what our season 2 is going to look like. So be on the lookout for that. And hit us up on any social media. We're at the FFW Podcast on any of them. And we try to respond, interact with you there. We love doing that. But... as always, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.